Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Yeah. Money ain't a thing.
Well said, Jimmy.
That's our song for the intro. Look at what's happening. This is something brand new, unique, wonderful, highly requested. Maybe not in this particular combination, but highly requested. How's it going, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
And I'm DJ.
Joined today because Josh Lee Kwai is out of town, and so we decided to have a little fun in his absence. We're doing something that I don't think I would ever really have a full episode with Josh about because he's just not passionate enough about it.
Do you know what? He's not.
He doesn't even double sleeve.
He doesn't double sleeve?
No. He like is adamantly against it.
That hurts me so much.
It hurts me too. Oh, and it hurts his cards. But Josh is in Iceland right now, so we brought DJ on to have a special...
Josh is in Iceland, in Iceland.
Just randomly in Iceland.
Okay.
Quite the adventure. Yeah, I know. I kind of just dropped it like it was nothing.
I know, right?
So DJ is here to fill in, and today we are talking about something that we're both very passionate about, and that is blinging out your decks. And we're going to cover a lot of different ways that you can bling out your decks. But most importantly, we care about this a lot. You actually, when I first saw you play Commander, I was like, "Hold, what is going on? You have some amazing cards on your table." So that's going to be really exciting.
Oh, yeah.
But before we get into that, we have to call out our sponsors, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Guess what? What are we going to be talking about today, DJ?
We're going to be talking about some fancy cards.
A lot of cards, and a great place to get those cards in high quality, pristine edition. Card Kingdom they are very strict with their grading system.
Well, one thing that's great is that they're a huge store.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these things are not stuff that you can go down to your local game store and pick up. You just can't. So you have to go to a big store to find them.
Especially realtors. Yeah. Realtor? Not realtor. They're not selling. Well, they could be selling lands, I guess. So yeah, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You're going to be buying these cards anyway, so help us out. Our other sponsor, Ultra Pro. You got to protect your cards.
That's right.
A lot of sleeves to be put on these things. Also, blinging out, we'll talk about this later, but a way to bling out your collection is with cool swag that matches all of it. So, Ultra Pro, next time you're at an LGS or online, pick up some of their product. And finally, the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. And we call it one lucky patron each. I decided to choose a hard name for you this time.
Good.
So, one lucky patron gets a shout out, and that person is...
Gustavo
Poschidonio.
Oh, good job.
Oh, thanks.
I'm going to say good job. It's fine. Gustavo's out there being like, no, Jimmy, no.
No.
And I'm complimenting you. Good job, Jimmy.
Only one person said my full name. Anyway, Gustavo, thank you. You rock.
Thanks, Gustavo.
Okay, let's just get right into it because I think we're going to be talking about this for a bit here. Let's start from the beginning, DJ. Why do you like blinging out your decks? And why do you like putting special cards in your deck?
Yeah, well, it's really because that's what Commander is all about, is your own personality in your deck. And a lot of things that we talk about is building your deck with your own style, maybe your own little mechanics, maybe your own little pet card.
Ah.
And another thing that you can do is make your deck look exactly like you want it.
Yeah.
Put in some little bits of extra style. And there's nothing like a few foils or a few special cards to make your deck feel loved, right?
Yeah, and not to mention bring you joy when you play it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, something pretty in front of you. You want your deck to be gorgeous.
Also, I think one of my greatest satisfactions in playing is having other people go, not just like, oh, that's the card I know, but like, oh, sweet, can I see that?
Ooh,
and it's like a nice show and tell, you know, without having to play show and tell. and of course, I think people are familiar with Marie Kondo at this point. And I would say foils in my deck are one of the things that when I literally pick it up, it brings joy to me.
Oh, yeah.
Foils, altars, all these things that we're going to be talking about today. So we're just going to go through and we're going to highlight some of our personal favorites. A big forewarning, though, if you're listening to this on the audio version, there may be no better episode to tune into the video version of this podcast because we're talking about a ton of cards and they're not just regular cards. They have a lot of different things to them. And we're going to be showing them off in some cutaways and close-ups so you can really get to see just how beautiful some of these altars are. So make sure you watch the video version if you have the chance. Those of you that are already watching the video version, you did it. Okay, topic number one, and this may be the single biggest topic we talk about, foils. Mm-hmm. I think this is the most obvious when it comes to bling because literally foils are shiny to begin with. Magic has printed so many foils over the years that foil used to mean like, oh, premium foil was like a descriptor they put towards it. But at this point in time, there are so many foils that I think saying premium sometimes is actually a little deceiving because some of these foils are not necessarily expensive, but they're still beautiful.
I think also when they put a foil in every Masters pack for those Master sets, that might have taken a little bit away. Well, foils are kind of just out there now instead of just something really, really that you need to seek after. And then maybe in order to get something really special, you need to take it up a notch maybe.
Yeah, and that is exactly what I like doing in my decks because we have, if you guys remember, there are the Masterpieces and the Expeditions and the Invocations, which were a special, I guess like alongside a standard set, they released these very, very special Chase Mythic foils that were of cards from all throughout Magic's history. The Expeditions were the first ones that were announced and they were all those awesome fetch lands that had these sort of like pseudo full arts to them. And for me, I had a lot of joy collecting these because, one, fetchlands, you obviously need them in every single deck if you want to be running multiple colors. And also, you know, having that much art on a card is something I really value.
I love, and the art itself is beautiful.
Yeah.
Actually, the one complaint, and these were universally liked, the one complaint was that the art wasn't even bigger.
I know. You know
what I mean, like, that's
and I
the
kind
thing
of
that
have that complaint too.
You're just like, no, more art.
More art.
They really did a great job. And I think that the art drives a lot of Magic cards in general.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The bigger art we have, the more art we have, usually it draws people to it. And that might be why some of the Amonkhet invocations might have been a little bit of a miss because they shrunk the art a little bit and really ramped up the border instead.
You know, and that's actually why I chose the video background behind us today. Oh. This is the invocation art for Days.
It's amazing. Do you have a Days playmat? I have this playmat.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing art.
Yeah. And I do think that there was, I mean, here's the thing. I know actually some people that think the invocations are awesome. They're thematic and they fit very well in, let's say they have a Scarab God deck or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think the reason that I really love the original of these expeditions, and you're right though, I still want more art, is because of the fact that, you know, the, like an art like this on an invocation, just being taken down that much. It's a little bit of a feel bad, but I still think that these are one of the coolest ways to bling out your deck in a way that makes everyone at the table usually stop and go, what is that card? Maybe because they can't read it.
Well, speaking of these sort of masterpieces, one of the most recent ones we got is the Box Topper.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed that they extended the art out a little bit. Do you think that Wizards is picking up on the fact that we like art? We like it if it kind of gets a little bit bigger?
I think so. I mean, like, think about it this way, right? Every time we're able to announce full art lands, people get, oh yes, this is, what a beautiful box topper. Now, did you crack that or did you get that separately?
No, I didn't crack them. I just...
It's a mana vault, by the way. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, we'll talk about altars later on, but a lot of altars are about extending the art to the full frame.
That's right.
And a lot of Magic cards, even like the full art lands from the unsets, they still have a black frame around them, except for the most recent ones. So I think Wizards kind of understands that, like, this is a cool way to make your card still retain what it means to be a Magic card and give you the full experience of what the art is. Because I think the invocations did miss the mark a little bit in that case specifically.
So in terms of foils, Jimmy, are all foils equal in your heart? Or do some of them...
The hard-hitting questions already, I'll know.
and do some of them maybe miss the mark a little bit? Because we know that there are different types of foils out there.
Yeah, and I think it would be amiss of us to not mention that, like, recently with all the curling issues and seeing cards that should be beautiful but then start to, like, warp in on themselves, it's like, ah, darn. I wish these foils were as beautiful as some of these really old, because I have some foils from 7th and 8th edition, and those look great. And it actually looks, I guess older is the right word for it.
Yeah.
In the same way that you could pick up a book that was printed today as opposed to a tome from days past. And it's like there's a very different quality of what the paper is. It doesn't mean one's necessarily better or worse. But I think foils do hold the same place in my heart. But sometimes in cases where it's curling or it's like the invocations where it's like, ah, it's not everything I want. It's not as shiny even. Mm. I kind of miss
it. What about the from the vault foiling process?
Now that is something really interesting because me personally, I've gotten, I think, 4 or 5 from the vaults. And I've only had curling issues with one of them, but the foiling they do on it is slightly different.
Yeah, the foiling looks different. I think you have one right over there.
Yes. So this is the Gilded Lotus, which was from the Vault 20, most known because it had Jace the Mind Sculptor in it. And if you notice, this card is flat as can be. And that's because I literally sandwiched it between very heavy books and it just did the job. But the foiling, it's different because the foiling, if you can see here and you'll see it in the video, it goes left to right almost with how it cuts down the foil. Whereas with other older foils, you can see individual pieces of the art highlighted. Like someone's holding something, you can see that flashing on
and
the card.
And even older foils where only the border
right.
is foiled. So yeah. This is an Academy Rector that only has like a shiny outside to it. So it's a completely different thing. So
yeah.
Of all of those, also there's a junior championship. Have you seen the Secure Tribe Elders have like the weird star foiling on it,
yeah.
which that's like a corner case. But of these like normal foils, like from the vault, like pack foil, you know, some of the older ones, some of the ones around it, what do you like the best?
I honestly like, if the art is good, I don't want it to have a from the vault foiling on it because it's not highlighting the art. It's just more of, it almost feels like a lacquer they put on top of it. At the same time though, it's not like it doesn't make it, I would rather have that than a non-foil in a lot of cases too. I think my favorite though is when the art gets to have small pieces of it highlighted.
So you think that their current sort of technique of doing the foiling where little bits of it are kind of a little bit more highlighted, catches the light a little bit more, that they're doing a good job?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I've liked what they've done with the foiling for those. Although there is something that's very nostalgic and makes me very happy to see like the Academy Rector that only has the outside foiled because it does give that look to it.
It feels old, doesn't it?
It feels old, yeah. And there's something again about, it's really fun to play with older cards in Magic for me, because when I grew up playing Magic, that was what I felt. I saw the, you know, the unlimited white borders.
Oh yeah.
the super weird rounded borders for Alpha and Beta. That's like what really makes me remember the joy I had playing this game. Now, the other interesting foil, we forgot to mention one, and perhaps because it's the hardest foil to read out of all of them. But the
even harder than the Almond Cat ones?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. We are talking about, ladies and gentlemen, the San Diego Comic-Con foils. Now, I don't even think the camera can pick this up from where it is in the studio, so we're going to have to cut to a closer shot of it. But what do you think about these foils?
I thought that they were amazing. I got a bunch of them, put them in my cube. No one could read the cards.
It almost came to the point where I've drafted these in queue before and you just kind of pass it.
it was like, so it was actually kind of disappointing on my part. And so I just took them out and like, I still have them in a binder. I'm still happy about them, but I don't know. It ended up being a little bit of a miss because if I'm not playing with the cards,
right.
then I don't know. Am I excited?
Are they
to own
as
them?
Useful? Right. I mean, these are almost fully black. The aesthetic and what they look like is really cool. You know, you really have to have this under a light to see sort of the full like magnificence of why this is a cool look. But the legibility. So that definitely actually takes away from it. Even though the foiling is great and they did a good job making the card and the art is really cool and it's very unique and these are one of a kind cards at for sure. Not being able to play it.
I know, right?
Big downside.
But I think they've done a good job moving forward with the San Diego Comic-Con sort of cards. Recently, Therese Nielsen did the most recent one, right?
With
just beautiful art, just amazing stuff. Like reminds me of, I don't know, just stained glass because there's stained glass pieces and this sort of like epic nature of the Planeswalkers. They felt more epic in that art than in a lot of others.
I think they definitely recognized, okay, I think, because originally it was blackboard and then the next year they did the black thing again and then they realized, you know what, maybe we should be changing this a little bit more. And Wizards, if you guys have noticed, is a very, like, they adapt very often and very quickly to things. They change how standard rotated, like, twice in 1 year.
Surprisingly quickly, too, because we know that they make sets way in the future. Mm-hmm. So when you say, like, oh, it's, like, 9 months later and they finally changed it, it's like, that's heard and immediately changed it. And then that was, like, the first time they were able to jump in and do it. So I think that they've actually done a good job. And another thing that's also related to this is we kind of got exhausted by Masterpieces.
Yep.
And
Wizards just stopped it.
Wizards just like changed it up.
Yeah.
And that's why for Ixalan, some people were thinking that they had those different arts, those promos that had the different art on the other side and some stuff like that. And so they're like, look, we'll use the art. We hear you. And they changed it up.
Yeah, that's actually really, you're right. It's surprising to me that they do it that quickly. But I think they understand too that at the heart of this game, it's still a collectible card game.
That's why we're into this stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I
love it.
That's definitely, I mean, look, playing games and winning games, once you start to play more Commander, you realize that winning games is just not going to happen that often. Because four players, your percentages, you're not like a pro player trying to get a 70% win rate. That's just almost impossible with games of Commander.
But also, the collectability, I like playing janky cards too. So
yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm not going to stop playing janky cards to up my win percentage. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. You guys know this about DJ. You know, you guys have been watching for long enough to understand that. Another great place to find foils is at pre-releases now. Pre-releases, mm-hmm. every single pack, they'll give you a card that now because of the guilds and stuff recently, you have guild-themed packs. But, you know, one of my favorite cards is this beautiful Westvale Abbey. And it's a card that's a land. And because it's a flip land, the backside is also foil. But notably, on the front, you have the stamp of when the pre-release was. Some people consider this better than the original foil. Some people consider it worse. But I like this because it has a little bit of both. You still get the foil back of this card as well as the front with the pre-release sticker.
I like it when I attended the pre-release.
Yeah.
Because even if I didn't get that specific card, if I traded for it, mm-hmm. or if I bought it later, I remember the time I was at that pre-release.
Yeah. And I think it's a great reward too, to give someone that's like first time players at pre-releases, opening up a sweet foil. It's a rare or mythic. Like that's, I saw a kid's eyes light up when he opened a Sarkhan, foil Sarkhan.
That's awesome.
That's like one of that, and that like that right there, I was like, I can go home. That makes me happy. That's all I need to see, because you know that kid is going to be playing that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What are some of your favorite foils? I have a couple of them in front of me.
So we're also talking about like promo foils and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, totally. So, anything that's under the foil. So we have promos. There's buy box promos from the vault, the Jace Spellbook series.
So I mentioned the Academy Rector already. Mm-hmm. I think that this kind of represents old foils, like the ones that are super old and have that unique foiling process. One of my favorites.
Please watch the video, people.
One of my favorites is this Elish Norn that's written in Phyrexian.
Yes.
So you can't really read it.
Yeah, you actually can't read it.
But it just extends the flavor of Elish Norn to like the entire card.
Yeah.
And the art itself on Elish Norn is so cool. It didn't need to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And now just having it be like a card that's all Norn right there, all Phyrexian.
All
just
Norn,
makes me feel
all the
so
time.
Good playing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It is an incredibly good looking card. It almost feels like a piece of art itself. Hmm. One of my favorite foils is just this full art Wrath of God. It's a card that we all know what it does. But it's the version that is able to, and this is back in the day, right? They extended the art as much as they could, and they have it all the way up and down. And it's a great way to really symbolize what it feels like to cast the Wrath of God.
One thing I also like is that for a long time, even now, Wizards rewards their judges with awesome foil cards as the judge promos. So this one specifically is a Wheel of Fortune, and it's got
so
unique
cool.
art. It is... It's just really cool because you have this iconic card, Wheel of Fortune, and it's like now it's reimagined in something else. And it's cool that they support their judges, and the judges also get some cool cards.
Yeah, that's definitely I know that obviously judging is hard. It's tough. It often you feel undervalued. So it is nice that they actually get something.
that would
be sucky otherwise. All right, let's talk about another very important subject here. That is lands, my friend. Lands.
Jimmy, this is like one of my favorite things to do is make sure that my mana base is exactly what I want to in my deck.
Because you have the ability to, right?
I love it so much.
How many lands have been printed across the history of Magic now? Probably more, no, easily more lands than anything else in terms of like cards that are in the world, right?
So many.
Everyone has a box of just only lands, and they printed, you know, obviously this is the most important part of playing Magic. You can't do anything without lands. The fact that they've had these for so long means that they've also been able to make some amazing lands. So the most legendary lands, I think, in terms of price and sort of like exclusivity would be the Therese Nielsen Guru lands.
Yeah.
And you've seen these around. They have like, it's sort of like a, in the middle is a sun or a moon shape, and it's got the same circle sort of pattern, but these things are mad expensive. And I've actually never decided to get one because I think it's actually a little, it's not in the realm of what I want to do with my decks.
I also don't own any, and I own so many lands.
Yeah.
It makes me a little bit sad that I don't have one, but it's just, I can't, I don't know. It's too much. I've seen legacy decks that have, but by the way, in a lot of legacy decks, you only need like a couple of basic lands, right. But like they're those guru lands, and you just look at it and you're like, oh.
Look at the choices of lands that aren't even altars and stuff. You have the Euro lands. You have the promos.
By the way, the Euro lands, the APAC lands,
yeah,
are some of my favorites. Basically, Wizards of the Coast wanted to promote the spread of Magic in other countries, and so they said, "Look, we're going to make iconic lands of art in places that you'll recognize."
Yep.
And so this one's Venice, island that's supposed to like represent Venice. And it's gorgeous. And so those are the Euro lands. And on the bottom of every Euro land, you'll see the place kind of where it's supposed to.
Venezia, Italy.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
And they'll have like Icelandic stuff or like from stuff from Norway and stuff from Scotland.
Right,
and there's all sorts of stuff. And then I think for APAC lands, they did something similar. Those are a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the most iconic ones are like Australia, where they have a kangaroo and their famous rock, which I forget the name of.
Right.
And then Mount Fuji and stuff like that. Like these iconic things. Yeah, for Japan.
I like that a lot. I mean, it's bringing magic to the real world, which I know some people are like, no, it's a fantasy world.
Yeah, yeah.
But could you imagine being from Venice or having visited Venice, loving it, and being able to play these lands in your deck?
Oh, I love it.
That's
love the art style of them too. I think that they're just really great.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So let's talk about some of the other lands you have.
Let's talk about some other lands. So I mentioned some of the, they did a series of arena foils.
Yes, I have a couple of these.
Yeah, and arena foils are great. And this kind of foils a card that wasn't able to. This was like from Ice Age.
Yep.
And that ended up being very cool. But actually, one of my favorite types of lands is just find the art that you like and go with it.
Yeah.
These are ones that people universally kind of like. This is the Lightning Bolt Plains.
Lightning Bolt Plains, very iconic Lightning
Bolt. Which is kind of iconic. And then this is like autumn, sort of an autumn forest kind of style. But honestly, this doesn't have to get expensive.
So what's your favorite set's aesthetic going back? Do you have like one that's like, that? I love the aesthetic of that.
See, different sets and different decks will have a sort of a different feel to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as far as we're talking about here, we're talking about a lot of stuff that brings up emotions. And so I think the thing that just piques my emotions the most are just got to be those beta lands, those beta basics.
Yeah.
They just remind me of my youth. And that's why I kind of gravitate towards them, even though they're kind of simple in terms of art. Like I think the art is much more beautiful on a lot of these other ones.
Right. More detailed, but I still think the simplicity is kind of what makes them beautiful in a lot of ways. Like even looking at like really old, like the Minotaurs from back then and some of the old art, it's just like, yeah, the original Llanowar elves, right? It just has something to it.
So weird, yeah.
Yeah, it's just something to it that, like, you know, magic was breaking so much new ground at the time. You know, I heard somewhere that magic fuels like 70% of the fantasy art creation in the world annually.
Are you serious?
Yeah, think about how many cards they have to
That's
make,
awesome.
How many sets they have to make in advance, and the artists they're just constantly hiring out. I think the only place that can really compete with that would be a video game company like Riot or something, but even then, they're not pumping out 300
that many characters, you know what
characters,
I mean?
Like, unique pieces of art, lands every like 3 or 4 months in the hundreds.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so obviously Dungeons & Dragons too, I think, has a lot of that, but it is pretty interesting to see just how much fantasy art is coming out there, and that you know, that means just more choices for you as a player.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some of these guild lands, actually, because this is very recent. This is a great way for you to pimp out your deck early and without actually having a huge cost associated with them. And these cards, they're so vibrant. It almost looks like someone cranked the saturation dial up.
Oh
like,
my gosh. I love the detail on the frame. Just imagine if you have a Selesnya deck and you're running these Selesnya guild lands.
Right.
Like your deck is going to feel like Selesnya. It's going to feel so cool. And people are going to look over at your mana base and be like, oh, wow.
That's really what you're doing.
They're
going
to notice how it matches and how it like generates a feeling for your deck. And these are not expensive.
Yeah. They just came out. There are plenty in existence.
Right now.
Being new right now.
Yeah. Until, you know, you said that and now they're sold out and you're You're manipulating the market, Jimmy.
I know. It's Sometimes when we get really excited about things like Vidalcan Orrery.
Oh, Josh is in here. We're going to talk about Vidalcan Orrery.
Yeah, we could. We'll have him decide. Maybe we'll do like a break at one point. But like, this message is brought to you by Vidalcan Orrery. It sucks. No, just kidding. There have been times where it has really sucked, though, and I wish it wasn't with my deck. But we can talk about that in a little bit. Yeah, expeditions are also top lands to put in your deck. These guild basics.
Do you know what else that just came out that's very inexpensive but is pretty unique? Are the they came out with this global deck series.
Oh, that's right, the Yu Yang. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was not something that a lot of people figured out because it was very much targeted toward China.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And it had a lot of style to it, really.
Yeah.
And that was what was so cool is that the art that they commissioned was really great. It felt like it really belonged in this global deck series. And they are all unique basics that a lot of people haven't seen. And you can get them for almost no money.
Pennies on the dollar.
Exactly. And you can have these unique lands that people really haven't seen before, but might fit the style of your deck really well.
I like that. I like that quite a lot. I think there is some the discoverability of why when you find something that makes people go, wow, I didn't know that existed is also a big reason that I like blinging out my decks. It brings other players joy to like learn a little bit more about the universe that they're in. We almost forgot to mention Zendikar basics.
Oh, yeah.
These aren't, again, like when we went back to Zendikar, we had these as well, but full art lands that you can get very easily, honestly. There's still so many around. And they look nice. They play nice. I know a lot of people that use these in draft sets because they're, you know, it's not like they're super rare, so they're not worried about them being a little dinged up or whatever. I like that quite a lot. I would recommend that. If you're like just starting out and you're like, I don't know where to start, just grab some full art lands. That's a great way to just bling out your basics without even really putting that much effort into it.
You can go even lower than that. Just like match your lands.
Match your lands, yeah. Have your land, or just from the same set. You know, you build a commander from a set, why not just use the lands from that set?
Oh, do you know what I forgot?
What's that?
Here's one thing I forgot. Two parts. Number one.
Oh, yes.
Number one, the white-bordered tilt. The white-bordered tilt is a thing.
Yeah.
Okay. But, but Jimmy, where does this white border come from?
Ah, this is Portal Three Kingdoms, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
It's one of the Portal sets. And so some of these are, again, unique art that doesn't make it onto other Magic sets.
Right. So the Portal sets, notably, were all Chinese artists, right?
Yeah.
And they specifically were like, let's do this. It was like their first go at like an Asian-themed set was the Portal Three Kingdoms set.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Imperial Recruiter originally came from, the sort of the chase card from that. But yeah, that's beautiful. This is by a guy named Qin Jun. So that's not a name you really see very often. You usually see a lot more Western names in the art, I think.
But isn't it? Yeah, I agree with that. But isn't just a gorgeous mountain?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It's a gorgeous mountain, and you get the added benefit of white border tilt.
You know, I personally like white borders.
I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with it, too, because it's just, again, you're expressing yourself through your deck. And if someone says you can't have any like borders that aren't of the black variety, like what? It's not their place to say. But the tilt you can get from people.
Oh, I love it so much.
You know, I've seen someone quote unquote bling out their deck by putting all mismatched basics, half white bordered, half not.
Wow.
Yeah, just like, you know, they're just like, you know what? I just open my land box and I throw them in there and I don't really care.
That actually bothers me a little bit, right? I'm not even seeing it in front of me and I'm like a little bit.
I know, it makes you a little, Yeah. All right, let's move on to our next category and that would be old school. So these are cards from back in the day.
Oh yeah.
They feel different. They look different. And I think some people, like we were talking about the whiteboard cards, sometimes they get hated on. But I think for the most part, these are cards that I love because, again, they remind me of that original thing.
Well, you know, when you asked me, like, what are the basics that I, like, really grab onto?
Yeah.
I talked about those beta basics was, like, the thing that I was like, that's what brings the emotions out. And so playing with some of these older cards, even though you might have the option to play with newer ones, that gives you those feels.
It does give you those feels. And for me personally, one card that I always want, I've traded for these cards at conventions, I bought them online, would be Lightning Bolt. This is a card that like meant so much to me as a kid growing up that just seeing it in its original state with its kind of faded text at the top, those big round edges, the artist illustration name, it's like really no other text on here but what exactly needs to be put on. This like brings me a lot of joy. And I think for me, right, I can see someone being like, I came in at this set. Those cards mean a lot to me.
Oh, yeah.
This is when I came into the game, and that's why I love old school cards.
Yeah, and that's
more than anything.
And that makes a lot of sense, too, because like we might be talking about it from our own perspective, but that's when I came in the set. So I look at that, and I'm like, oh, yeah. You know, like I'm really gravitate towards that. But someone else might gravitate towards, I don't know, like they came in during Mirrodin and there's that weird coloring of artifacts and they're like, yeah, that's the set that I really want to explore.
Some people don't like brown artifacts too. Some people like the grayer ones.
Exactly. Like,
you're crazy.
Yeah.
Do you play with a lot of super old cards? Because I'm looking at one right now that makes my mouth drop.
Yeah, this is, I do like to play with old cards, although I don't have, they tend to be a little bit expensive.
And hard to get. Especially for someone like me that needs everything near mint. It's really hard to find old cards.
This is not a near mint one.
But it's okay though, because it's so old.
this is a demonic tutor. And I love also like the how dark.
Yeah, you can barely even read the mana symbols
are or the text on it. But it just looks so awesome. It just feels awesome and old and stuff like that.
That art was what the first image I think I saw of Magic the Gathering was that art on the booster box, I think, the original. Just the big head with the horns and the pentagram. And I was like, this is crazy. I don't know what it is, but it's so cool.
This might be the reason why this was banned at my elementary school.
Oh, 100%. Demonic Tutor was probably one of the worst ways.
And,
I think
Unholy Strength or something like that. Yeah.
And like skeletons and stuff. Did you know that in China there's a law that doesn't allow you to have, I think, like Show the Living Dead or skeletons, so that any art that is like that needs to get redone before it's printed in China.
Really?
Yeah. Pretty crazy, huh?
That's crazy.
Yeah, so that means there are other alternate versions of those specific cards in China that you could use to play out with your deck.
Why don't I own these?
And it comes with a little cultural history as well. Yeah, look it up. It's a really interesting law. I don't know exactly why it's implemented, but Magic obviously has a huge audience there, so they need to, you know, make alternate versions
That's
of art
so
sometimes
cool.
for these specific cards. Very interesting. Another thing that a lot of people like to do is, and I've seen this in Standard, you know, when they brought back a mana dork like Llanowar Elves, people would use super old school Llanowar Elves because functionally it's the exact same card. And so seeing that on the battlefield next to all these random cards is like, that's so cool. You found a way to bling out your deck in Standard that wasn't putting useless foils in or something.
Someone recently had a Standard deck. It was a bad Standard deck, but had a Standard deck that was all old school things.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it was really weird. But
it's because they released those starter decks alongside Standard. And so cards like Shivan Dragon are constantly legal in Standard. That's
pretty
very
cool.
funny.
Yeah.
Also, if you win a standard match with Shivan Dragon, you have my respect. anything else to talk about old school cards? I mean, the old foiling we talked about as well. Oh, small note. Like we said, it's hard to find these cards in pristine condition because it's just hard. You know, having been around that long, they're going to be dinged up. People didn't sleeve them back in the day. One thing that you can be on the lookout for when you're purchasing these cards is sometimes it's okay to get a scuffed up card if most of the scuff is on the back of the card. And I found that's the case with a lot of these old cards is where they would be played on pavement. So the backs of the cards would be all scuffed up, but that affects the overall quality and the front of it is relatively undamaged. So in that case, you can get a great deal on a card if you're looking for something like this. And because it's in a sleeve, you're never going to see the back of the card. So that it doesn't matter.
Good stuff.
Good stuff indeed. Okay, this is probably where you're going to go the deepest here, DJ.
Yeah, it's kind of my thing.
It's your thing for sure. Your binder is filled with gems of all kinds. We're talking about altars and alternate arts. Now, specifically the altar community, I didn't realize, it's huge.
Yeah.
A lot of the artists don't even play Magic. They just love drawing on these sort of miniature canvases and extending the art or doing something over it instead. Where did your love of altars start? Where is this all from?
I think it started with me really wanting to have a blinged out deck.
Right.
But then not really having the option to bling out certain cards or feeling like I couldn't get there. Like I couldn't bling it out or I couldn't get this old school beta card or something like that. And so what did I do? Well, do you know what I'll do? I'll make it a little bit better. Maybe I'll do something that's like a tiny altar, like I'll have Jimmy sign it.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Or you have your friend sign it, or you draw like something on it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Or then you take it up a notch and you know, have someone else do a little bit of a doodle on it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think it
like
started
the actual
off
artist.
With exactly with artist signatures and with artists sort of doing a little doodle on the stuff. So we have a few of those.
Can we start with your strip mine though, just to show people where you can come from? Oh, actually, we can do that. I really like these.
Okay, so these are some examples of you go to an artist or you send your card into an artist and they have a couple minutes to chat with you, to sign your card, to do a little bit of doodle on it. And
maybe they're busy at the GP. So
exactly. Like they're not
them.
Doing something. They have the potential to do something just amazing, but you're giving them a couple bucks and they're being nice to you and you guys are having a nice chat.
Yeah.
So right here we have a doubling season and a crater hoof. By the way, my crater hoof's better than yours because it has flying.
It does, actually. It has a, someone wrote in a Sharpie, comma flying, signed it, and then drew green wings on it. And it's goofy, it's funny. But it's,
I love it.
But it's so unique because there's nothing. This is the one of a kind card right here.
Yeah.
Is there any other Crater Hoof Behemoth that has a comma flying with these green wings?
He's probably repeated the idea a few times. Someone out there watching probably. This is like, he did that for me too.
But there's nothing exact. There's no one for one copy of exactly this.
Yeah, and that's great. And it reminds me of the event that I was at.
Right.
It reminds me of
you had a conversation. You got to talk to them. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. This one he
love
took a little bit more
season.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this doubling season, he just said, look, I'm just going to draw something. And so he drew this like crazy Medusa.
Yeah.
Like attached
using
to
the doubling season head. As a head. Yeah. The hat is really cool.
He also has an amazing signature.
Yes, he absolutely does. Now, this is something that I feel is definitely one of a kind here. It shows, and you know, I like the feeling of someone being like, I'm at a GPM, I'm doing a lot today, but you know, I'm going to sit and I'm just going to spend some time on this because it really does feel unique. And very special at that point, you know, it's especially if it's a card that's an integral in your deck.
Yeah.
Having someone like that alter it feels
this
great.
This is another version of his signature right there.
Oh,
so you can
very
see
nice.
It's like a little bit of a shadow signature. They'll be able to see it up
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Shadow signatures are pretty cool.
I've had a few artist proofs and stuff that have that.
And like, again, like little doodles and stuff like that.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. Actually, you brought out a Mana Vault, and one thing that we it's kind of hard to cover in a specific category, but the iterations of a card over time, there are lots of different ways to represent cards. Let's say your player in Mana Vault is your favorite card of all time. Well, guess what? You have like 6 or 7 different ways to represent this card in your deck, and they're all unique and very cool. So
absolutely. Some of them we've already talked about before, and this is the one that's the most recent one. This is basically, hey, this is a Mana Vault, and now it's got tentacles, and now it's got my signature on it. So it's got a little bit of extra style to it. But that's not the other only Mana Vaults. We talked about, you know, Masterpiece Mana Vault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's out there. We mentioned Box Toppers, you know, Box Topper Mana Vault. You know, we're going to be talking about border extension type altars. And so that can take sort of this white border version and extend it out because some people are trying to avoid that white border style.
And turn it into something different. Yeah.
And then one other thing that we didn't mention before when we're talking about sort of older cards is the foreign black borders.
Right.
Foreign cards in general.
Yeah.
And foreign black borders are a little bit different, and you can always go and get your foreign cards. Like we mentioned a little bit of the idea of the Elish Norn, you know what your cards do, but you can have something in a cool foreign language that really speaks to you. You know, go out and get that foil Russian stomping ground.
I was gonna say deck. Some of them cost less because they're in a different language. Some of them cost more.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about a lot about those foreign cards later, but
one unique thing about foreign black borders FBB is that it was a time when all the thing cards in English were white bordered because that was a time when Wizards said if it's a reprint, it'll be white bordered.
Right.
First printing, black border. This was the first printing in that language, so they put it in black border. So for a while, you could get black bordered cards that were way cheaper than the English versions, but looked like way cooler. So you
and
can
are
compare,
identical, essentially.
Yeah, you compare these two, and this is black border just in a different language.
That's really
and
cool.
And it like changed the prices dynamically.
Yeah.
Or dramatically. And so foreign black borders, like, people have caught onto this because they realized it looks really cool.
It does.
So foreign black border soul rings are not as cheap as, they're more expensive than white bordered soul rings, whereas they used to be kind of the same price.
Also, a lot of times the name retains almost the identical name in the foreign version. Like you're going to see the word SOL in a lot of the foreign versions of soul rings. So you still actually, it's not like I can't even read this. This looks completely different. It's like, no, this is a soul ring and it's black bordered in a way that you didn't think was possible.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the idea of those Mana Vaults and stuff like that was an idea of like, well, where can you go? What kind of spectrum can you see of these cards? And I mean, a few of those were altered. So let's kind of jump into altered cards a little bit.
Yeah.
And the way I'm going to introduce you to altered cards is by showing you, maybe Murph shouldn't zoom in on this one so closely. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
So actually, like if you see it right here, in the video, it might look like an awesome altered strip mine.
Yeah,
and nice. It totally is.
It's awesome. It's so awesome, DJ.
So I did this strip mine. I'm not like a super good artist or anything like that, but I did the strip mine and I was like really proud of myself that I did it. But this is a really good example of how alters can be not so good.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. And so as I point out my poor quality on the strip mine, it will let you appreciate other people's alters more and know what to look out for when getting your own alters.
That's a very good point.
The first thing I want to point out is just the text. It's really difficult to get a very fine brush around all the text and around all these edges. So you can see around the word strip mine, I did not pay enough attention to detail to actually outline it properly.
It's a bit of a mess.
It's a little bit of a mess.
There's a little bit of blue bleed from the sky around it. There are some points where it's like, that's just the original card and nothing was done around it.
Yeah.
But it's your mess.
It is. It is my mess. So one thing that you can look out for is
fine
detail around specific things like edges, around the text box. Mm-hmm. Make sure that that's clean.
Right.
Around the text, make sure that's clean. Around any mana symbols, make sure that's very crisp.
Right, because when these cards are being extended, oftentimes you want to keep the original text box. And to do that, you're going to need, you know, obviously a lot of detail to make those straight edges perfect. Otherwise, any bit of sloppiness, you're going to see it.
Exactly.
Right? It's like a tattoo. It's not being changed anytime soon. It's going to look like this forever.
Exactly. One other thing that artists do to achieve like a really beautiful altar is they use lots of very thin layers. It means that this mm-hmm. is very arduous. They don't just get like some oil paint and go glop and they're done. They're putting on layer after layer after layer, sometimes blocking out different areas.
And why is that?
You want to make sure that you don't add a lot of thickness to the card so that it ends up being clumpy and weird. And you want to make sure that it's flat.
Right.
Like a plain card should be.
When these cards are printed, they're printed with a very specific amount of ink across the top. And when you're drawing on it, that it's not like paint doesn't have actual texture and size. Mm-hmm. It is going to be making your card slightly thicker.
And also, when you pile up ink or paint on there, you can tell. And so I piled up quite a bit of paint. If mm-hmm. you were to run your finger across this, or if we could shine the light on it, like you might be able to see.
Just a slight change in light, you can see certain parts are shinier, certain parts are duller, meaning that's where paint is. You even added a small amount of paint in the middle of the original art, it looks like.
I did, yes.
Was it to correct something that you did?
No, it was to kind of... So sometimes it can be difficult to match the colors exactly. Good artists match the colors exactly. Bad artists add a little bit of their own color into the painting so that it looks like it's matching a little bit better. Like that's part of the whole art.
I see. That actually makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't say bad artists. Maybe artists in training.
Clever artists.
Clever. Oh, clever artists, DJ.
It turned out that this actually like took a long time, and I looked at what other people were doing, and I was like, "Yeah, this isn't worth it.
It's not up to
this
par.
This isn't worth it. This is going to take a long time to master."
And have you made any altars since then yourself?
I made quite a few altars. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like maybe 20 or 30.
Okay.
None of them are as good as the altars I'm going to show you today.
All right.
Yeah. But
and there's no shame in that.
No, yeah.
And there's a lot of fun in completing something like this.
Oh, just totally.
To say, look, I did this.
There are tutorials online, and maybe we'll find one and put it in the description down below.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know.
Many tutorials out there.
but if you want to, like, you can do it. And I still play the strip mine in decks because even though it's like a little bit not as blingy as other stuff, it is because it matters to me. It's something that I like.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a really good point. It matters to you, and when you play it, you'll know that you'll remember the blood, sweat, and tears that went into it. And again, it's on the other side of the table, even if there's some small mistakes there.
Totally.
It's a strip mine. It's gonna go to your graveyard anyway, right?
I know, right? So then we can start talking about sort of other altars in general.
Professionally done altars.
The way some people can be super clean. This is a hymn to Torok. And you can, if you look at this, you can tell that the text around it is super clean.
Not just that, but he actually altered it around so that normally it's a flat text block, right? With straight lines. Mm-hmm. The artist used the art to kind of have it leak on, but in a way that looks very purposeful, like someone had specifically done this to the text box. And I'm shining this under a light right now. You cannot tell where the original card art was and where the artist rendition starts.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And the if you look at the words Hymn to Torok here too, it's incredibly clean, almost down to the pixel of around the writing there, and that's great.
So you wanna see something that isn't clean?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's take a look at this Treasure Cruise.
Wow, not clean, but equally awesome. Now this is a card, I've seen this done to cards like Damnation and stuff before, which is the reality itself around this card is being blurred and being torn apart. The card itself is like a living relic. And in this case, this treasure cruise is peeling at the edges. They've added an extra border around the whole thing to make it look like it's supposed to be altered art, but it's cracked. It's not in pristine condition. But because of that, it's actually incredibly stylish.
Yeah. And so you can see that they're, again, messing with the text box a little bit. They're doing that rounding because it harkens back to those full art promos that you mentioned earlier with the Wrath of God I don't remember the other one you brought.
Cryptic Command.
That round style. So they're hearkening back to that, and they're messing with the border and sort of distressing it, which actually they're not really extending the paint anymore. They're not extending the picture.
Right.
But it still like feels very cool.
It's very impactful, right? You play a card like this, someone's going to look at it and they're going to double take because it looks like a normal card, right? But it actually tricks the mind a little bit because it's like, wow, what happened to your card? Oh, wow, that is cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
One other thing to keep in mind is that a lot of altarists, they fade to black at the bottom because it is easy, mm-hmm. and it does sort of draw your eye up to the main
art itself. Yeah.
But one thing that actually causes a lot of, I think it stands out a lot, is when they don't do that.
Ah.
When they actually sort of take the art all the way around.
Wow.
So this is a Spike Weaver.
Yeah,
where
it's
you
amazing.
Can see the art kind of go all the way down to the bottom, and you can sort of see the branches and the webbing and stuff like that all over the place. And so it really does feel like you're in that place.
Yeah. You get to see what the spike has weaved, right? And it's a tree. Obviously, you know, if you did take a picture of this thing in the wild, maybe there is a branch down there. So I like how an artist can imagine that and incorporate it into the actual art to extend it a little bit. That's really smart. And in this case, it doesn't really take my eye away from the actual art of the card.
I don't think so either. Yeah.
It makes me appreciate this magic card. Like, magic cards don't look like this, right? They never have looked like this. And so having a professional artist do this and make it so seamless, that's a really satisfying thing to look at.
Yeah, totally. And then we have some other things where we start just expanding it even more. So we talked about, you know, hey, let's just extend the border. Let's just mess with the border a little bit. Okay, well, let's just not have any black down there. Let's go all the way. And so now we have something that actually takes the art and goes completely everywhere.
Yeah, this is Disenchant.
This is a Disenchant. And one thing that had worked in the artist's favor with this is that it was already a full art
piece of art
promo, basically.
Yeah, right.
But then they sort of extended it all the way out. Just like some of the other foreign cards that we talked about, you should know what Disenchant does if you have this card.
Yeah.
But you'll notice that in many cases, they leave relevant information on, like casting cost. They leave on the name. They leave on the text box. I might give a little disclaimer at the end about playing with altered art cards in different settings.
Yeah, right. Because sometimes you may know the card entirely, something like Cryptic Command. You may know all four of the modes in exactly how it's written, the exact formatting, but that doesn't mean every other player does. But this is great. I really like it. Obviously, you know, it just keeps the text box at the top. It doesn't save anything else. And it's that poor Mox just getting blown to.
I know, right? So this is another full art, but now we're sort of entering into, we're altering more than just border extensions. We're actually changing the art completely.
Yeah.
And so this is an Animate Dead, and it also just destroys the text box, goes super big, keeps some of the framing around it, which is interesting. So it didn't even go as full as the Disenchant, but it actually becomes something completely different than Animate Dead.
Absolutely. And this is what I like to say when an artist takes a card and creates a literal canvas out of it. They already have the border. They have everywhere they want to draw on it. And they even did something cool with the text of Animate Dead. They sort of put like sort of these white dashes of lines through it to make it feel almost stylized, like it was a specific font or something you'd see on a movie poster almost.
Absolutely. And so, again, you need to know what Animate Dead does if you're playing with this card.
It's actually a very complex card, too.
I know,
there's
right?
a lot of text on it, yeah.
Do you remember that it gives -1/-0? You might not.
You might not.
But also, some people love this. They're like, they think this is amazing. They think it's gorgeous. They pick it up. Some people are actually put off a little bit by this because it goes so far away from what they feel like a magic card should
be. Right.
Different people are going to have different perspectives, but some people are definitely put off by this. They can't recognize the card as it comes down. It's a big thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I've often seen people have someone play it and they go, oh, man, do I have to really look that up right now? I don't really know what it does. And I think that is a bit of a feel bad because something like this took a lot of hours to do. It could be something you're really proud of, something you're really glad you got. But to have a negative reaction like that at the table is a bit of a bummer sometimes. But it's because the card, I think you said it right, it looks so different than a magic card. Mm-hmm. It looks, the only thing that you can recognize is pretty much the name and the mana cost, because the rest of it doesn't have anything else to signify that it is a card that you play in Magic the Gathering. So it's very interesting. I think, you know, for the most part, if you are going to put a lot of these cards in your deck, you should do it for yourself first and foremost, but do pay attention and see if people need a little bit of assistance when it comes to that card coming on the table. Because if you make a play mistake with it, especially not knowing the text, then it's on you and things get real hairy at that point, I think.
Yeah.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
So we kind of talked a little bit about some of the downsides of altars, and I want to expand upon that a little bit. One other downside is that these in many cases are very individual. Like, they are for you.
Right.
And in many cases that decreases their value. A lot of vendors don't want to deal with these at all.
Right. Because how do you price them?
They don't want to buy them. They don't want to sell them. A lot of people, it's so weird because sometimes an altar can skyrocket the price of a card. The other time I've gotten altered cards that I've enjoyed the alters on for cheaper than the original card.
Right.
Because it's so hard for them to move them. So if you alter something, you have to expect that you are lowering the value of your card because you're making it less marketable.
You're actually drawing on the card, right? And if you're gonna think about, like, oh, okay, this is how a card is rated, you know, if it has a ding on it, well, what if it has layers of paint on it? Same idea.
I know, right? And then also what you put on it ends up being like super duper specific.
Yeah.
So like, these are great. Example, this is Princess Mononoke.
Yep.
If you want a Knight of the Reliquary and you love Princess Mononoke,
This is the card for you.
This might like be like exponential. You're like, oh my gosh, just take my money.
It's the silver bullet to your heart.
Exactly. But like, I've run across cards or gotten them in collections where it's an anime that I don't watch and I'm not excited about.
Yeah. Or it's a little, I don't know, large breasted for my taste.
Yeah. I don't play with those. Yes.
That's not my kind of alters.
Yeah. That's not my, exactly. And so it ends up being like super specific, so you're really limiting it.
Yeah, I love this Knight of the Reliquary, by the way. And Princess Mononoke, one of my favorite animes of all time.
It's one of my favorites too.
This is the silver bullet to my heart right here. It's a really great rendition of the character too, that's not based off the original.
Yeah.
This is amazing too. Now, this is another, probably my favorite movie of all time. It's the Empire Strikes Back version of Swords to Plowshares. And it's great. It has Luke getting out of his snow speeder after it crashes to the ground, and you see an AT-AT or AT-AT walking towards him, and he's sort of getting out of there. Now, this brings up so many memories of just happiness for me. And I don't even play, this is not my card, but if I saw this on the table, I would go, I'm so glad that I got swords by this altar.
Yeah,
representing,
right?
My favorite movie. That makes me, actually, it's kind of a political tool, but only on the person that's having it done to them. Because I could totally see myself being like,
I can always swords your creature with this swords, Jimmy.
Yeah, right? Because I'm gonna be like, I can't get that mad. Okay, A, obviously the creature probably deserved to be swords, and this card's just so sweet. It's my favorite movie.
Here we go. Bling ends up being a political tool.
You know,
right,
it's so bright and shiny when it hits the table. They can't even see what it's targeting. And by the time they get their vision back, they're like, what happened to my permanence? You're like, don't even worry about it.
Majestic. So that's kind of one thing of the downside, which is also kind of the upside, is that it is so individual,
right,
that it's really hard to sell them to see the value. So if you do get something altered, make sure it's something that you like and that you want to keep and you want to hold on to. Exactly.
Because I was going to say, you know, you have a bunch of great cards here, and part of me is like, oh, I really need this card for a deck or whatever. But looking at that card, I would go, you know what? I like what it's done to it. It's done well, but it's not something that speaks to me. So I wouldn't actually want to trade for it. So you definitely should, like DJ said, if you're doing something, make sure it really speaks to you as a player.
Exactly.
Because you want to be happy playing.
So one thing that speaks to me is that I'm like a literature geek.
Uh-huh.
And so this is...
survival of the fittest.
It's survival of the fittest, but it is redone to be Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Huh. And it's not just any illustration of that. It's from J.R.R. Tolkien's translation or his version of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. And I love that story. I love J.R.R. Tolkien. I love the illustration that's kind of tied to this. And so when I had this commissioned, it was something that really meant something to me. And I liked it on the card. And also, I didn't want to pay for the Judge Promo Survival of the Fittest.
No, right.
But like, no, that's, it is but not that is easy actually, that but card. That is actually part of it where it's like, well, I want something special for me.
Yeah.
And this is what ended up doing it. Now, we also have the exact opposite.
Tell me about this in Tomb.
We have this in Tomb where this one, I told the artist exactly what I wanted, mm-hmm. and they did an awesome job. With the Entomb, I knew the artist was an amazing artist. And I just said, go with it. Do whatever you want.
Wow.
Just do whatever you want. I like the way you do stuff. And I gave them the freedom and I just wanted to see what they created and put on the card. And so that's two different styles. Some artists love the freedom of being able to be like, okay, and they do something crazy.
Right.
I've done this sometimes with artists and just been like, I like your stuff, do whatever you want. And I think that I gave them too much freedom. I think that their best work was like kind of copying something or taking something that existing and transforming it onto a magic card. And so I wasn't really impressed by it. But sometimes when you give an artist freedom,
right,
like they can produce something that you would never have imagined. And that is so, so cool.
Yeah, I like that quite a lot. I think a lot of it comes down to trust as well. Maybe you're someone that's this is Marta, right?
Yeah.
She's done a few of your cards now. So it's great to see, obviously you trust this person. So it's like either you give them a lot of direction or you don't, because you know that whatever they're going to do is going to be to your standards.
Yeah. Or you have a vision of something you want and you find the artist that can execute it.
Yeah.
I don't think I would give Marta like a superhero art. She could probably do it, but she might actually gravitate away from it because she's like,
it's not my style.
I think you'd get a better result from someone who draws mm-hmm. like these kinds of things. Like, so, mm-hmm. so find an artist that is really good and then like, talk to them, work with them, develop a relationship.
Yeah. And if you're also trying to figure out what kind of altar do I want, just look up altars online and images. There are so many incredibly different ones out there. Sometimes people will do stuff that's like very current. They'll put like the characters from Adventure Time on their card, or they'll do a president, they'll do all sorts of different things. So really the sky's the limit. There are plenty of artists out there that do this. And I think for them, it's also a lot of fun. So
Altered Art Facebook group.
Yeah.
There are amazing altarists. By the way, when you look it up online, or maybe they'll flash up some images or something like that. There you might see the best of the best, but mm-hmm. then realize there's a lot of people out there like me who do a strip mine poorly and might put it up on eBay. And then you might not be getting what you want. Mm-hmm. So develop a relationship that you trust, look at a person's work, and then remember that they're a talented artist.
Yeah, you're commissioning them after all.
And sometimes it's expensive to hire talent and to let them know that they're appreciated. Thank you, altruists out there.
Thank you, artists in general. It's a lot of hours put into a craft that obviously deserves compensation if being commissioned.
Yeah. So I have another altar here mm-hmm. that's pretty good. So... I didn't show off this bling, but this is my promo Gaia's Cradle.
It's one of the hardest and most expensive promos I think to get.
Oh, it's so shiny and gorgeous. Okay, so I like this card. It actually reached my threshold for like being able to be included in decks because it's too expensive now.
Right.
It wasn't that expensive when I got it, but now it's like crazy. Actually, Gaia's Cradle is crazy right now. It's so expensive. So part of you is like might be I want a Gaia's Cradle, but it's just so much. And you might want to bling out your Gaia's Cradle like me, but it's like, you can't be running these in your,
you can't just be throwing them everywhere. You may have one between all of them.
So I have this Gaia's Cradle right here that has its border extended. But in actuality, it's not a tournament legal card.
It is a yellow bordered, gold bordered Magic Championship card. And I actually run some cards like this as well. Here's a Flooded Strand from the Magic Worlds.
Yeah, you have a different back on.
Yeah, mine's from San Francisco. Where's yours? Which one is that one from?
This is the Tokyo, where they kind of put together the championship deck of Tokyo or whatever like that.
Yeah, so I mean, these are cards that are not legal in tournament play, not legal anywhere else except for our lovely format of Commander.
Your kitchen table. Are you ever angry if you see someone with a gold bordered card?
Absolutely not. And I've told this to a lot of people. Cards are expensive. We all want to play Magic, and this is a card that was created by and printed by Wizards of the Coast for players to play with. We are the one format that this card can exist in happily, and oftentimes save people a lot of money, like this Gaia's Cradle. Gaia's Cradle is not a cheap card, and the fact that you can play that in a deck and get access to a Gaia's Cradle, I mean, that's a legitimate way of going about it, in the same way that you would get like a foreign card that maybe cost a little bit cheaper, like my Mana Crypt. That was a book promo originally.
Yeah.
Was cheaper than Mana Crypt, the original printing of it. Did all the same functioning things. I can't ever get mad at someone for wanting to save a little bit of money when they came to this stuff.
Yeah, and that's, here's the thing. These were designed for the kitchen table, right?
Yeah.
They're like, take them out at home, play with them and stuff like that. And we are essentially a kitchen table format where we're like, get your friends together and play cards. And so I'm 100% behind these.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are more and more behind them too, because a lot of people just don't even have gone up.
Yeah. And a lot of people just don't know about them. Mm-hmm. I'll play one sometimes and be like, did you get that altered? And I'm like, no, this is from a deck that had a lot of different things. Yeah. It's totally, totally interesting.
Yeah. So this is one that I particularly like a lot, and it looks like an awesome Gaia's Cradle, but then ended up costing a fraction of the price because I can't play it in tournaments.
I had no idea that was not a real Gaia's Cradle. Yeah, that's awesome. Cool? That's great.
One thing that you should know is that sometimes, we're speaking of playing these cards in tournaments, sometimes when you alter a card, it can be illegal to play in tournaments.
Yep, because the card itself may have started curling because of the liquid you put on it. Maybe thicker. There's a lot of different things that they can disqualify a card for. Even if you put all the cards in your deck and when you draw the card and it's right there at the top, if it just floats a little higher than the rest of them because it's, you know, a different size, that makes it illegal in tournament play.
Also, they say that your card should be recognizable kind of thing. So a lot of times if you've changed the actual art on it to something else, so this Swords to Plowshares, even though it's flat and, you know, has all of the relevant text, they're like, no, it's not a recognizable Magic cards. It could get in the way of people playing the game.
Yeah. Because if someone looks at your board and they don't recognize a card that they normally know as X art, they make a play mistake, then whose fault is that? And the easiest way to avoid all that is just saying no if your alter is not destructive, but transformative to the point where someone might get confused.
And by the way, a lot of the rules that you might see just says nah. And a lot of judges might just say, nah. But here's the thing. You go to the head judge, or you go to a judge and say, hey, can you take a look at these alters and see if they're okay? They will write on your thing that they have been checked and they're okay. Yep. Or they'll tell you too bad, and then you have to scramble to a dealer to buy some new cards.
Yeah. So don't go into a tournament with alters unless you have backups, I would say, or you know for a fact that they're going to be A-okay and vetted.
So we talked about some weird non-tournament cards that you talked about, your weird backed Flooded Strand. I talked about my Gaia's Cradle. There are a few other cards that are not tournament legal.
This is a Magic card. It's blank.
Mine's cooler.
Yeah, yours has art on it. But on the other side of this Magic card, it's a Masterpiece Mana Crypt.
Oh my gosh.
What? But why is the back white? Well, if you look carefully, this does not have the collector's foil stamp at the bottom that is normally reserved for cards of rare or higher, because these are artist proofs. And these may be my single favorite things to get, artist proofs. So what happens is whenever an artist makes art for Magic the Gathering, they'll receive their cards as artist proofs in the mail when the set comes out, basically saying, thank you so much, here's your cards. But they won't be tournament legal because they're going to have full white backs on them. And so what a lot of artists do is they'll sell them for additional money for themselves. They'll alter the back of them. They'll draw cool art on the back of like this Lantex that DJ has. But it's the exact same card functionally. And it has foil on the front sometimes, or it can be unfoiled. And just like the gold border cards we were talking about, they're legal in Commander.
Because
nowhere else.
I mean, and I don't know, people might be like, what, the gold border ones? But no one has a problem with artist proofs.
Absolutely not.
And sometimes you find artist proofs for less money than the actual card.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's way, way more though.
Yes. I think it's slowly become way, way more. I bought a bunch of artist proofs of the expeditions and stuff when they came out.
I'm so jealous of you right now.
But the way that I did it is that, you know, I realized these things existed and was like, wow, this is a really cool market for cards that I know I want to play and can play in my format, because I'm not interested in playing Standard, Modern, or whatever else. So I followed the Twitters of artists on websites. And after a release came out, I would track them. Sometimes I would just ask them, hey, are you selling artist proofs of these cards that you had? And sometimes it could be as basic as, you know, someone made a land, a basic land. I was like, I really like that land. And I know they're going to get foil versions of it. If they're selling this, I'm going to totally get on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So just tracking those artists down made a huge difference.
One other thing is that that artist gets all of that money.
Yeah.
That's what's really cool too. I like that. Sometimes the artists can kind of go crazy.
Yes. These
are
incredible.
I can go crazy and get these. So this is another example of old school cards that I love. Mm-hmm. I have a Hazazon Tamar deck that I really love. And so this artist, basically did a span, on the back of their artist proofs.
Wow.
From these gorgeous cards. And so
these are full watercolors as well. I mean, these are incredible and they all match together. So if you put them in a specific order, the art follows each other onto all of them. They're in color. They're beautiful. They're detailed. These are just gorgeous.
And now all the people listening to the podcast instead of watching are jealous.
Yeah. Jealous that they can't see what I'm seeing right now and what video viewers of the podcast are seeing right now.
I think that a lot of this aspect as well is we love the art on the front. Give the artist an opportunity to sort of show us something on the back.
Yeah.
Do something special. Give them an opportunity to like say, I love your stuff. I just want a little bit more.
Yeah. And a lot of times they'll draw their favorite character of it on the back. Like mm-hmm. I have a Chandra, the Planeswalker. I have an artist proof of that. And on the back, Magali drew this beautiful version of Chandra. And you know, it's like just great to be able to have
that's so cool.
A little touch. And it's something that they put time into. And it's something that, you know, you're not just paying for a potentially more expensive artist proof, but you're also paying for a little bit of their work as well, which is great.
Should we talk about one more not tournament legal card?
Yeah, totally.
So there's sometimes you have proxies mm-hmm. that far surpass a marker on a basic land. And this is from the Proxy Guy.
Yep, Proxy Guy, very well known in the community for making high quality proxies.
Follow him on Twitter so you can see like all of his proxies. And this is a sort of tweaked Masterpiece Soul Ring that I got from him. And it's awesome.
Yeah, you get to see the full art, which I think a lot of people didn't. Again, the sort of thing that people complain about invocations and even the masterpieces and the expeditions is that you couldn't see the full art on them. So the Proxy Guy went ahead and made these obviously not tournament legal cards. But
not tournament legal, not for sale.
Not for sale, but it has the full art of the Soul Ring because this art was put out on the internet. Mm-hmm. And now you can fully see the Soul Ring in all of its glory and it looks great. And, you know, he obviously does a great job making these cards look and feel great as well.
And so if you are in your own particular play group and you have some way to make something cool, like make a cool proxy or make something so that it works with your play group, mm-hmm. then go for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know some people say you have to own the Soul Ring to play this in the play group, but you know, like, you know, Vinny has a system where he only has one of certain like very more expensive cards and he'll just rotate that in between decks. If you already have that card, but you don't want to rotate the card every time, maybe you can replace it with a cool proxy or something else that, you know, really signifies that card to you, but also the other players know what it is.
I know some people that really play Magic Online all the time. Mm-hmm. And one of their things is that they will print out the art from Magic Online and use that as a proxy. And so they'll have like weird arts that you're like, it looks familiar, but why is that? It's a Magic art. And there's like, it's from Magic Online.
It's Magic Online.
And it's here in my paper deck. And that just makes them so happy.
Yeah, it's I love some of the alternate art on Magic Online too. I've seen some of it on Gatherer sometimes. I'm like, wait, why doesn't that exist in real life?
Why don't I own this?
That's so nice. Wait. Yeah. One other thing I wanted to touch on is that there are a lot of alternate versions of cards instead of alters on the art. We're talking about alternate art. A few of them that come to mind is a lot of the FNM promos usually have a different version of the art on there, and these are all great ways.
We mentioned Judge promos.
Judge
too.
Promos as well. There's a very special card in my heart, which is this Ugin, which came out of these special packs from Fate Reforged that had alternate arts, and Ugin was sort of the chase of all of them. And it's just a different...
Still the chase.
Still it's the chase. Awesome. Yeah, it's just a great looking card. There's a specific Kaya Ghost Assassin from Conspiracy.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It's like, even on the collector number, if there's like 253 cards total, it's 254 out of 253. So those, I think, are great ways to really like add a little, almost hidden little spice to your deck. Because the card looks normal, but it's like, wait, why is that art just different? Where's that coming from?
That's great.
So I'm a big fan of that. Next up.
Oh.
Yeah, let's talk about these. Miscuts.
This is a little bit of a different way to bling your deck. Sometimes Wizards of the Coast makes a mistake.
Yeah.
They print they're printing company that makes a mistake.
Right.
And then it ends up in the
booster pack because no one is able to catch it.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is a miscut Sultai Ascendancy. You can see it's like super off centered. And if you were playing a Sultai Ascendancy and that you play this instead, people are going to be like, what is going on with that card? And
is it falling out of its sleeve? No, exactly. It's just a miscut.
It's just a miscut. And so that's like a good example of like a cool miscut. This monstrosity of a miscut could have been hand cut where someone got a full sheet and then they made the most ridiculous miscut possible.
Yeah.
Or it's a really bad mistake, but this is so much harder to play in a commander deck.
Yeah.
Like what card is this, Jimmy?
It looks like Trap Essence, but it also looks like that giant uncastable black spell for all those, making all those zombies.
I think it has Delve, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got Delve on it. Yeah, that's all I know.
It's always castable when it has Delve. Also, for some reason, it's like super bendy.
Which makes me think this may be something that someone cut out themselves.
Ooh, maybe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it isn't properly stamped out, so there's allowed to be more moisture to the side of the card. Right, so,
who knows? Who knows?
Jimmy's so smart. Anyways, this seems to be a little bit harder to play.
Because what card is it?
Exactly. Well, Jimmy, the trick is that it's both cards. You play it in a four-color deck.
Split.
And then you basically get to choose in the moment what card you're going to tell your opponents it is.
Well, you know, I think Wizards has been doing a great job doing these new split cards, but it's a little unintelligible, so I'm not exactly sure what's happening. That's great, though. Yeah, when you're playing these, I think these are very hard to play in Commander because you need to be very clear with your playgroup what half of the card it is. Miscuts exactly. Also raise in price and rarity if they happen to have text of the other card. If it's just like a big, because I've had a lot of these, you open the pack and one of the borders on your cards is really thick on the right side and skinny on the left, but you don't see any other cards on it.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, I don't think those are even counted as miscuts. I think the real definition of a miscut is you start to see another card on it. And the more of the other card you see, the more valuable it is, which is why you sometimes have people that buy these foil sheets and cut out their own fake miscuts to really get like the premium miscut. This has text from both of them, art from both of them.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I think that this reaches some of the same ideas that we talked about with the alters that are super duper specific.
Yeah.
Like someone... I mean, if this one was real, someone could go crazy for this and be like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. And
maybe
like,
it is say, real.
It's like,
who knows?
I don't know. Maybe someone out there is like tweeting at me right now, desperately wanting this card. We don't know. Or it's just junk and no one wants it. It's all about your audience and it becomes very, very specific with miscut cards.
Yeah. I still like it though. I think it's hilarious that it's a Trap Essence that costs XX black, 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 black.
I like
and it. You can't even read Delve on the card. So maybe you can't Delve it. Who knows?
I don't think it's a very good card.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think it actually does anything.
It just does nothing.
All right, moving on. Another way that you can easily bling at your decks here. It's not just about the cards in your deck. Sometimes your tokens make a big difference too. And there's lots of different ways to have tokens. Now, Wizards has been printing tokens since the dawn of token printing. Most recently in the unsets, we had these really cool double-sided tokens. This is an elemental. And on the back side of it, is just 100% full art.
So cool.
And it's foil on the front as well. They also made these goat tokens at a certain point with these cool silver borders around it. And I think the silver border foils actually look really awesome.
Very
from the
cool,
unsets.
Yeah,
they shine so much more than the black ones do.
That's so
again,
cool.
Lots of ways to go about tokens. But tokens, I think, is one of those ways that people, I think, forget quite often. They're like, yeah, I could totally bling out my deck or make it more, you know, feel more me in a lot of ways.
Also, the Ultra Pro token topper. Things
yeah.
are pretty blinged out as
yep,
well.
That's right. The
so
relic
all
tokens.
All sorts of the relic tokens, all sorts of ways to really make your whole experience like feeling
yeah.
good.
All right. Let's talk about foreign cards real fast here. Now, foreign cards, I think, are a staple of a lot of blinged out decks. There is this sort of pervasive thing that Russian foils are the top tier kind of foil to get if you want like the best premium foreign card. For me, I don't really care much about
it. I don't really care about it either. But,
yeah.
But I look at the way the text looks is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's why I really like your Elesh Norn. It has that kind of strange looking
yeah.
text. But
Jimmy's
for me,
calling Russians strange just now.
The Cyrillic outfit
happened.
Or whatever it is, yeah. But I do love the Asian language cards. And I think Japanese cards are sort of the top of what people really want in terms of like in general, like, oh, cool, I love Japanese cards. And Japan's been playing Magic for a long time. They have some incredible pro players as well. And I think... For me personally, I love getting Japanese cards and putting them in my deck. There's something I feel, I don't know, strangely connected to it. Even though I can't read Japanese, I actually like these more than the Chinese cards because the text, I think, the font, whatever they use, is a little more artistic, a little less blocky. I have this defense of the heart here that I'm looking at. And this reminds me of one of the most important points. Know what your card does. And we've talked about this already. You gotta know what your card does. If you make play mistakes with a foreign card, it's so on you.
How many creatures does Defense of the Heart trigger on?
3. If an opponent controls 3 or more at the beginning of your upkeep, search your library for 2 creature cards, put them on the battlefield, shuffle your library. Oh boy. I said that with like a hinge of doubt in my voice, just a little bit.
Do you know one foreign card that I want to mention, do a shout out that I really like, that I don't have in front of me, but someone will put up? It's Glory. They were experimenting a little bit with all of the different kinds of languages they could put on cards. And so Glory is the only card ever printed in Hebrew.
Whoa.
Yeah. And Glory is a cool card too.
Yeah.
And the writing is from right to left instead of left to right. And so it really upends what a Magic card looks like. And it's all about the language.
Yeah. Having the activated cost on the right side and the colon on the other side is very off-putting. It's weird, but it's obviously how the language is written and read.
Yeah. So tons of different ways to explore foreign language in your Magic cards.
Yeah. And also something really interesting. If you go to Japan, bring your English cards with you, because we have sort of a fascination with Japanese cards in English-speaking countries. And the opposite is true, I found, in a lot of Japanese places, that they'll want your English cards and they'll trade. You'll think their cards are less valuable than yours, whereas you think their cards are more valuable than yours. So it's like this interesting trade-off where it's like, oh, cool, yeah, totally, I'll do that.
That is so cool. Do you know what else? It like builds relationships too. You're just totally. All right, let's do some trades.
Yeah.
That's
you
so
have
cool.
that version of this card? I have this version. Let's go. One for one.
That's awesome.
For me, I would always take that one for one because I feel like I'm getting a better deal. But I guess in their case, they also think they're getting a better deal, which is kind of the perfect place to be at for trading.
I know, right?
Yeah. Are you ready to toss?
I'm always ready to toss.
Ooh, off the front.
I know.
All right. Now, we've talked about a lot of expensive cards today. Let's not kid around.
Yeah.
Blinging is not, you know, the name suggests shiny, expensive. But there are lots of ways, and we mentioned a couple of them, to budget bling. You know, they had the guild kits for the lands that we were talking about. They have the dual decks that have alternate foils of different cards that are usually not that expensive. They had that global series you're mentioning with lands with art that you've never seen before.
You have gold bordered cards,
right.
Like sometimes artist proof cards, things that are non tournament legal. A lot of times you can bring to the commander table and everyone, it serves as bling and also saves your wallet a little bit too.
Yeah. And honestly, we keep saying this, but bling is subjective. It's what you like to do in your deck. You could be trolly about it and do the mismatched lands because that's how you want to bling it out. Or you could, you know, find cool ways to do it that's within your budget limit. Or if you're just deciding, you know what, I only want to bling out the instants in this deck. I just want to do the basic lands. You know, choosing something that maybe
cool.
thematic if you're tier commander or whatever you're doing in your deck. Or maybe you just, I've blinged out a deck based on what I just had around and then filled in the gaps.
Being like,
oh, I have most of the reanimator pieces for this thing. I guess I just need to buy 2 or 3 cards and that would help me complete out the bling and I can build a deck around this thing I already have.
Hey, Jimmy.
Yeah.
How much do you charge for signatures if someone runs into you at a GP or something like that?
$0.00. I'm not the professor. Just kidding. He doesn't charge. He doesn't charge either. None of us do, I don't think. But there you go.
But seriously, like you run across Jimmy and you're like, dude, like this red card, it's totally all
sign
it's
my
totally,
mana echoes.
Yeah, let's do it. And so now your card has that little bit of bling.
Yeah.
And all it was is it just like was an experience. It was just being there.
Yeah, and sometimes I'll draw tiny little things on the card, or like Josh will write "How's it" on the card when he signs it.
Now you have to ask Jimmy for an altar now the time.
Oh god,
it's like, all right, Jimmy, I want a thing drawn on it.
Yeah,
Jimmy's like,
you know,
Stickman number 2.
Nice. Yeah, we played Hangman on your card, and I'm sorry, but you can't read it anymore. But that's a memory. I'm of the school of thought though that if you put a pen to a card, you ruin the quality a little bit and reduce the cost. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm always just like, I'll sign if sometimes people have given me some very expensive cards to sign and I like cringe on the inside. I'm like,
do you sign an inner sleeve instead?
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I usually ask them, are you sure you want me to sign this? Are you absolutely sure? Can I not sign a perfect fit instead on top or whatever? And when they do, they're like, no, it means a lot that you're signing this and I want you to sign it, you know, and that to me is like, there is something really special there. And I really appreciate when people say that.
The value of something doesn't really matter. The resale value doesn't matter if you're always going to keep it.
Yeah. And it's something that will remind you of a time and a meeting and, you know, all that good stuff. Good times. All right. Another way to bling out your decks. And the second to last thing we'll talk about today are accessories. We are surrounded by accessories, in fact. We have this very awesome Hascon playmat here, one of the coolest playmats ever, not to mention it has two sides.
Grimlock.
Grimlock.
You know I have a Grimlock deck?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I want you to play it so badly.
You guys, it's not a good deck, and you guys play really good decks.
I know. Well, we can have a night where we all bring out the jank stuff.
Jank stuff, and I bring out all my Transformers, and every card in the deck flips over.
No way! That's awesome. So I have
So I even have like the flip planeswalkers and more things and stuff like that. Yeah,
that's great. I love that flavor. And then you have a Black Lotus mat here. But accessories. We have deck boxes. We have dice, sleeves, play mats. All different ways to really bling out the cards that you're playing with. Ooh, what is this?
This isn't a Magic card, but this is from an artist. So if you go to artists, booths at GPs, or sometimes they have their own sales and stuff
this
like that.
This is nice.
Like you can find the artists and be like, I love what you do. And they just have a playmat that isn't on Magikarp, but is, you know, something that they do.
Yeah, that's great. And it's in their style, especially if you like their style to begin with. What
about a playmat from your favorite podcast or...
That's right. What if you could get a playmat that was exclusive or limited edition or related exactly to your favorite podcast / show like Jumbo Commander's playmat? Pretty awesome. The Command Zone has released two playmats that you can no longer get. But if you paid attention when we announced it, and that's what I'm saying here too, if you follow artists, like you said, sometimes they'll be like, hey, I finally got the usage rights to do this. I'm going to release this art.
Yeah.
This sliver that's never been able to be printed on the playmat before. It's coming out for a limited time only. Now you can finally buy it. That's awesome.
Awesome. And you guys are going to put out another playmat eventually.
Oh, yes.
So.
Soon.
Really?
There you go. Well, soon-ish. It's all relative. Josh is going to come back and like, Jimmy, did you promise
what
the viewers?
What did we do while Josh was in Iceland? We ripped on Vidalcanori.
Oh, that's right. We still have to do that.
We did a whole episode on fancy cards that he didn't want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we promised people playmats.
Yeah, in fact, 50 of them free to every single viewer of this particular episode that tweets, no, don't, please don't. Gosh, Josh is going to just
add
Josh Lee Kwai, yeah. How's it, everybody? Anyway.
But seriously, it's like find the thing you love and display it for people. And your play surface is a great place to do it.
Especially if you're like theming that to the deck you're playing. I know some people that will literally take out a new play map. They're like, I'm playing this deck. I got to be in the realm. And I'm like, that's cool. That's awesome.
I don't have the discipline to do that, but I love this.
I love it too. Yeah. Me, I'm just like, does it have a nice surface I can put my cards on? Great. Yeah. But at the same time, when you're following these artists on Twitter, the playmats they release, oftentimes like the Expeditions all came out, a lot of them became different playmats. I've seen playmats that are because the card art goes, you know, the portrait mode,
like a History of Benalia or something
that. I've seen playmats that go that direction too. Lots of different things you can do with it. Dice, deck boxes, sleeves, merch. Ultra Pro, remember those Doge sleeves I had way back in the day? Those were limited run. They don't get made anymore, but I still have all of them, and I get to get trapped with them.
As you can tell, because obviously all of these weren't in the same deck, I'm boring and sleeve everything in like the exact same sleeve.
Yeah, it makes it easier. I had to write down what went from what when I took all these cards out because I have to put them back eventually.
You're gonna end up with like Ugin in your hand, being like, this go?
Yeah, what the heck? Or you draw it in the game, you're like, nope, I can't even cast that. How'd that get in there? But yeah, the list goes on. Even like playmat tubes.
Oh.
You know, like small things like that. There are ways.
Cool.
You come up to the table, you're going to take your stuff out. What's that thing you keep whipping out that has all your lands in it?
Oh.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, the quiver deck box thing.
Yeah, right?
The professor just reviewed it. He said it was great.
Yeah, there's so many things out there. Magic is an ever-expanding hobby. Not to mention, every board game also has cards. So a lot of board games will have things that, you know, work, or you can get ideas from like, oh, cool, this board game does. I saw someone use the coins from Splendor as tokens or counters because they're like heavily weighted. They have a good feel to them. Coin flips, right? Like lots of different things you can do with other board game stuff. So find ways to like really spice up your life. There's so many things you can do. The relic tokens from Ultra Pro.
Oh, man.
I like it.
I like it too.
Finally, taking care of your cards. So do you clean your cards ever?
So what happens a lot of the times is I always double sleeve And very rarely do I take a card out of the inner sleeve.
Yep.
But what happens a lot of the time is that I'll get dust, like dust gets in the top and then it messes up the outside of the sleeve. In fact, I'm pretty sure you can see it on
some
of
these cards.
Yeah,
you can kind of see it. It's like you can see the outside layer
right there.
Yeah.
And then also it starts clouding up the inner sleeve.
Yeah.
And so I will basically re-sleeve or try to clean the inner sleeve and stuff like that just to make sure that everything is good with that.
Well, let's not kid around.
Do you clean your physical card?
I don't, unless it's an actual thing I can see on it that I'm like, oh, that's a real smudge. Because I found, and I've done this to cards before, where I was like, let me just scratch that off. And then you look at the card, you're like, oh, I scratched the card. There's a dent in the physical card. Because you can't, it's funny, we're in such a digital age that I think the reason that Magic is so great is that you're actually handling a physical piece of history. And especially if it's an old card, like this is something that's literally existed for 25 years. These are real things. You can affect them. You can bend them. You can do things to them. So you got to be careful. But at the same time, I found that I do switch out sleeves every now and then, because when you have a foil and you're sleeving it and then you're putting it into another sleeve, you're losing a lot of the brilliance of the original card. And it's part of it is to protect it, right? And if you really want to look at it, you can do what we've been doing, which is taking it out of the sleeve and like looking at it. If you really want to look at it, you can take it out of that second sleeve. But then at that point, you're just starting to worry, like, am I going to damage the card? Am I doing anything to it? And you do get to miss out on a lot of that glory. So that's why having clean sleeves and making sure that you also just, you know, don't play in dirty areas. Play with the playmat.
Play with the playmat. Play with both sleeves. Josh.
It's unbelievable, honestly. Now that we've reached the end of this episode, let's get to my favorite part of it. Let's rag on Josh Lee Kwai a little bit now that he's not here. Let's put the ice in Iceland for Josh. You know what I mean? Let's bring the heat. I don't know. Let's bring the sriracha. Let's bring the sriracha. That's right. We got his sriracha mug right here. How's it? I'm Josh Lee Kwai. No, I mean,
actually, let's first like shout out Josh, because this is the first episode that he hasn't been on.
I think so. I think this is literally we've been doing this podcast for like 3.5 years, right? And both of us, up until I left for New Zealand, I was pretty much on every episode too. And this is every single week, guys, for a long
time.
Crazy. There are lots. I mean, I think the big thing is that when you're working in a partnership and you're working with someone else, the moment that one person's not into it, it really hurts the whole equation.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like both of you are equal contributors to this thing when you're behind the microphone. And like for us, this episode was great. We're all talking about things that we love. But imagine if I just hated altars, or I was, you know, angry because I couldn't afford some things. And I felt, you know, then the whole dynamic changes. And Josh has been a consistent and amazing co-host for that many years to finally miss a podcast.
And by the way,
it's not deserved.
And by the way, if it wasn't me pestering him, being like, I want to do an episode with Jimmy, like he wouldn't have missed. He just would have recorded an extra episode.
Yeah, we would have. In fact, we did, because we knew he was going, and then he was like, you know what? This would be a great time for you and DJ to have your standalone episode. And I think a lot of this was made possible with the fact that I did leave, and then you guys hosted the show for a while. But Josh, yeah, he's a steadfast rock.
Wait a second, I thought we were supposed to rip on Josh right now.
Oh,
what
yeah.
happened?
Well, that's we're buttering him up so that we can crush his spirits now. Let's talk about, I think, the thing that most people, I think, already get angry about, which is Josh wins on game nights, right?
He does.
Check it out. I did some of the numbers.
Oh,
all right?
Really? Okay.
Well, because after the last game nights, I was like, why do people keep saying I'm always mana screwed? I have been mana screwed in episodes before, but I feel like it's not as much as I thought. And so I crunched the numbers, and over the games of Commander that we have won, Josh has, out of the 17 games of Commander that Josh has played in, he's won 8 of them. So that's close to a 50% win rate.
That's good.
I'm at 5 out of 15, so I'm at a straight 33%.
That's good too.
Now, if you take wins across every episode, including the ones where he did more limited formats, Josh is 11 out of 23, and I'm 8 out of 20. So Josh is a very consistent winner. It's a very true thing. And I've only been mana screwed 4 times out of 15, but that is enough. And we talked
about 4 times out of 15 is kind of a lot.
Hey, I kept some bad hands, all right? I would say at least 2 of those were entirely my fault because of Ancient Tomb and the promise that it gave me.
Ancient Tomb's a good card.
It's a great card. I have a lot of the expeditions of it because I love it so much. I put it in every deck. Yeah, so I think that's the first thing we can rag on about. Josh.
So what you're saying is Josh cheats at game nights.
Josh is definitely the biggest cheater I know. Hmm. No, I think what happens is Josh is very good at politicking, and he's very good at navigating a board state to a victory, which I've seen time and time again, whereas like You know, it's like, oh, okay, we'll give Josh a little bit of break because he's maybe stuck on mana or something. But you better be careful, because you do that for a little too long, he is off to the races and he's created an unstoppable engine.
Do you know what else I think is that both you and Josh have high win rates? Is because playing on camera is not like playing
That's
in
a
normal
good point.
Situation.
That is a very
where
good
there's stops and starts and you have to remember stuff. And you guys, in many cases, are directing as you're playing. And I don't know how you do it, but you do. And the situation itself throws people off a little bit. And then you guys swoop in and capitalize.
That's true.
I think Josh does more swooping.
Josh does a lot more swooping. Although there was a big misplay last time on the game that just came out with you in it. And that my Emrakul could have died because Josh had a sack outlet and a creature on board to ping it for that extra last damage. Because remember, it had 13 toughness and Vinny hit it for 12.
That wouldn't have changed the game either.
Who knows? Maybe, but at the very least, the thing that was killing everyone wouldn't have killed anyone. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there's, you know, we all do make mistakes, but I think the anger that gets thrown at Josh is that it's the fault of the other players for not keeping him in check. And I would say that's just a testament to how good of a player he is, which is he knows how to get to the position where he doesn't need to be kept in check. And you know, I think for me, it's a great learning experience about, you know, different ways to win. Because in that last episode, I think it was a bit of like, haha, we're playing the politics of it, but in a different, more goofy way. And I'm pulling the thing over your eyes, so you don't really know what's going on, but it's not as bad as it seems, right? As opposed to the more like deliberate, like, don't do this or I'm going to end you, you know, kind of thing. Like those deliberate, like, we had an ally, if you break this now, I'm going to just come at you for the rest of the game kind of thing. So there's so many different ways to politic, and I think watching Josh in action is you got to learn very quickly how he gets to these sort of states.
But you play with him a lot off camera too.
Yeah.
What do you think is your win rate then?
My win rate is definitely better because I think the power level of the decks is generally a little higher. I mean, we bring some powerful decks to game nights, but a lot of times I build decks and I add fun elements to them because I just want to do fun stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, I want to do this in the deck. Let's see if we can make this happen.
Yeah.
So sometimes you do get a little bit of that mixture to it. But I think the more competitive the deck, sometimes it's like, hey, we didn't stop him on turn 5 and it's game over. So you'll find that I think the win rates go down much less. More importantly, I think we should shout out our 100% win rate guests for Melissa DeTora and Ashlyn Rose.
Wow.
Who have won 100% of the games that they've played on game nights.
That's
legit. Take that, Lee Kwai. What happened to ragging on Josh? We're just sitting here complimenting him.
I know. Let's talk about Vedalken Ori.
Okay. Is it necessary in every deck?
No.
Nah.
I have a lot of decks. I have Vedalken Ori in a handful.
Yeah, I've started to take it out of a few decks as well, just based on like, this deck already has half instants in it. Why do I need another Ori on top?
I also don't know if it's exciting. And then one thing that I pointed out before in an earlier episode is that the more competitive your deck is, the less able you are to play a 4-drop that does nothing.
Exactly.
So if you have a competitive deck that is curving up and the game is ending at turn 8, then you've only been able to use that Vedalken Ori to use that jump in positioning for a limited amount of time, and it becomes not worth it. But a lot of times we play Battlecruiser Magic, where games go on a pretty long time into the teens of turns.
Yep.
And in that situation, getting that advantage of Vedalken Ori just kind of does give you a big boost.
Yeah, the element of surprise, sorceries turning into instants is pretty powerful. There's a reason they're printed as sorceries, mind you.
Yeah, so punish people that play Vedalken Ori, like make them actually hurt for taking a turn off.
Yeah.
And it'll even out a lot of the advantage.
I do think it is definitely a card that I overrated at first. I still think it's very powerful, right? I still like the card quite a bit, especially because sometimes when I think the card actually gets better when you're the fourth player as opposed to the first player. If you're first player and you're playing Vedalken Ori, then what's the real benefit there, right?
I think it's quite good, but you're right. It's jumping the turn order when you're turn 4, jumping into the first turn player. That's really good.
And I think the thing that we don't mention enough is that you really have to capitalize on how you build your deck.
Mm-hmm.
That when you do play the Ori, the next turn you're going to have some explosive stuff to do, right? Or it's not just like play 4, do nothing. Next turn, just play a 5-drop.
Like, how about Seedborn Muse?
Yeah.
How about if you build your own Prophet of Kruphix?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Pretty powerful.
Things like that. Or actually, sometimes if you have instants to hold up along with your threat, that's also good too. So if you have a deck that's pretty well balanced, where you want to be able to react and answer things. And by the way, that's how Josh builds his decks. He wants to be able to answer everything. He doesn't really build linear decks as much.
Yep.
So he might find that Vedalken Ori fits his play style more.
Ah.
And that might improve or bolster his love for the card.
So Josh, I think you should stop being a false prophet of Crucifix about Vidalcan Orrery. Clearly, you have created a false supply and demand situation here that shouldn't exist. The world wants more Vidalcan Orreries, and you have been telling them you've been just hyping it up too much.
Yeah, and your too hundreds much, of copies back there, you need to release them to the...
Yeah, no, he doesn't. We can't even open that shelf. It's stuck because there are so many Vidalcan Orreries sitting in there.
That you're slowly releasing to the public as you're increasing the price.
You are literally the only distributor of Vidalcan Orreries on the planet right now, and you
control? Hoard them like a dragon.
And not a single one of them is sleeved. Are they even valuable to you at that point, Josh? I don't think so. Unbelievable. Josh Lee Kwai, everybody. Thank goodness it's just the DJ and Jimmy show now.
DJ and Jimmy show.
No, with a little rainbow across the screen. I have enjoyed this quite a bit, though, DJ. I think this is definitely something that we both share a big passion for. One of my favorite things, again, at the table is going, ooh, wow, what's that? Oh, that's so cool when someone plays something.
I love it. I oftentimes take out my phone and like snap a picture of people's mm-hmm. awesome altars or their board state or their interesting card, their interesting choices. Yeah.
I like that a lot. And I think that's the joy of Magic, right? It's all up to your own personalization for a game like Commander. How you want to do it, there are so many different ways, and you don't need to kill your bank account doing it either. Yeah. That's important. All right, to the listeners, tell us, how have you blinged out your deck that maybe we haven't covered? Or maybe there's a way that you think is better than what we've talked about, or worse. Or maybe there's a fun, tragic story about you tried blinging out the deck and you did what I did, scratched the card out. Whoops. So let us know. You can tweet at us. You can leave a comment.
You're
going
to get so many tweets of like bad alters. It's like, I tried to do this and then that ended up happening.
I think there is a whole like subreddit for just awful
Magic Gore, MTG Gore.
Oh God, yeah. Ugh. But some of it is divinely beautiful in that
very
trolly way.
By the way, one shout out to MTG Gore is a DJ from Brainstorm Brewery.
Uh-huh.
He has a Gonti deck that is all heavily played or horribly marred cards, unsleeved. Like he has an unsleeved, like I think he has a Vaden Demonic Tutor that's just like thrashed in there too.
Oh my god!
And
gosh.
He just like riffle shuffles it. It's majestic.
It is the Lord of Luxury, and that's what he's putting in his deck.
So there is some gore that also exhibits your style.
That's true. That's true. I would think he'd be playing a more disgusting creature to go with that, not the Lord of Luxury himself.
Yeah.
Anyway, we talked about a ton of cards today, a ton of different versions of cards, some awesome foils. One thing I wanted to mention, 8th edition, white bordered, but the foils, black bordered.
By the way, like here's the foil peel that like we have so much to talk about. This episode is like
we
super long and we could even
it.
Go keep going. Yeah.
So these are just more examples of cards that you can get right now at cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. Honestly, there are tons of ways to bling out your deck, and you're going to find more options by just searching up a card. Card Kingdom will show you all the different versions that exist out there. You can look up the art and see exactly what they are and what you're getting yourself into. And while you're there, buy some Ultra Pro product as well. We talked about blinging out your deck. Bling out your sleeves, especially with all the guild stuff now. I kind of want to build all the guilds. Is that crazy?
I mean, you're talking to the person that had like 36. I at one point in time had every color combination of deck.
Whoa, you're that guy.
Yeah, I am that guy.
That's amazing.
I've since toned back a little bit, but right. Yeah, for a while I had every combination of deck.
We'll have to talk about that at some point. But Ultra Pro Products, you can now get the things that make every color and every combination look even better, more thematic.
Oh yeah.
So now let's move on to the end step, where we got to talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I wrote on the outline, DJ, this is all you because I'm so miserable at thinking of these
things. It's all me. It's going to be a quick one today because we've rambled on. And it's awesome. So it's a YouTube channel called Rousseau. And they just hit 1 million subscribers. And they've been around for 10 months.
Whoa. That's good growth.
That is good growth. But you're going to see it on the screen right now. So hopefully you're on the screen. You're watching this because it's the right thing. But basically all this guy does is he plays piano and there's like visualization so you can kind of see when the keystrokes happen. Uh-huh. And he just plays piano beautifully and you kind of can watch the music happen as well. And it's a mesmerizing and beautiful YouTube channel. So you should check it out.
Okay. So what do you like so much about this channel, DJ?
Listening to awesome piano playing is great and all, but I think that just seeing the visualization, you were thinking of Guitar Hero style stuff coming down. You can see the complexity and kind of get a deeper understanding or deeper feel for a piece. And so that beautiful visualization combined with the skill of piano just makes it intoxicating to watch. And I'm pretty sure that you guys might just watch all the way through as like a big playlist and then become his like millionth and first subscriber.
I could just see that playing in the background, but Layout looks very peaceful. Some of the arrangements he had are really cool too. Some mashups and some songs that you'll probably recognize. So yeah, Russo, make sure you check that out on YouTube. How do you spell it?
Jimmy, I just put my phone away. It was just in front of us right now.
I don't know. I'm going to guess it's spelled like
R-O-U-S-S-O-U.
E-A-U-E-A-U. Russo. Look up Russo Piano. We'll have a link in the description box below, and we'll be on the video as well. For all you podcast listeners, you're not supposed to be listening to this episode anyway.
We told you.
So it doesn't matter. Josh Lee Kwai isn't here. Quality's down the drain. I don't care. I do care. Anyway, thank you for that, NSEP DJ. Let's move on to the end of the show. That means we're talking about our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Those guys probably not as enthused about foils and all that as much as we are. But Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, Alex, by the way, had at one point built all of the guild-colored commander decks, so that's, there's a little tie-in there. You can find them, they talk about everything modern. You can find them over at TheMMCast on Twitter, as well as next to us on Collector.com. They also started doing videos. You can find that if you look on, them up on YouTube.
Our editor is Murph. Thanks, Murph. And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG. We talked about that days behind us.
Yeah, I'm dazed by it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and a big shout out to Murph and Terry, who I believe are going to be helping us film some of these cards so that you can really see them up close in the video version of the podcast. They're putting in a little extra work this week because you know what? Josh ain't here. So we gotta work harder than ever.
You don't need to work on game nights. Let's take our editors and make something cool.
Exactly. All right. Thanks so much, everybody. And DJ, where can we find you on the World Wide Webs?
You can follow me on Twitter at Jumbo Commander. The YouTube channel is Jumbo Commander, and I do all sorts of commander stuff. So you should check it out.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Bye. Thanks so much for watching.
Bye bye, everyone.
See ya.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.